Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Rog, Dave, your head's so big.
I know they've made a change on the app. I noticed that. Your head is also big. It's even bigger than mine.
Mine's life size.
From the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Bedford, New York, and I think for the first time ever, the crap part of the Meatpacking District. I'm in the MPD, Rog. It's a Men in Blazers Spotify green room.
Oh, Benny Bennett is the name. They've given up on Rog. Given up on that Rog crap. You're speaking. This is my debut as Benny Bennett.
Okay, well, Benny Bennett, it's our weekly Spotify Green Room every Wednesday at 7 p.m. during the Premier League season. For those of you GFOPs joining here on Green Room live, you know the drill. Start asking your questions in the chat right now. We'll pull you up on stage later in the show to hear from you. For those of you listening to this on a delay via your pod radios, all you have to do is download the Spotify Green Room app, search Men in Blazers in people, not groups, and then give us a follow. Rog, a big announcement before we get to the football.
Chelsea have signed Matamudiou!
Oh my God, we couldn't get that lucky. We are going to be at NBC's Premier League Fan Fest this Saturday, Rog, October 23rd. I don't believe Matamudiou's joining us. It's just going to be me and you, Rog. We'll see if we can get Matamudiou. Maybe Jennings will come over. Rutter, Holtzau, see if we can get the greats. We're going to be at the LA Coliseum, Rog. We've pinned the RSVP link to the top of our Twitter. In that tweet is also a special club access code that will allow you to skip the admission line. I need to get that. So be sure to RSVP, enter the Men in Blazers code, and we will see you there.
I'm not meant to say this publicly, but our special guest is Mayim Bialik.
Shall I go over this one more time? You just need to RSVP. The RSVP link is pinned to the top of our Twitter. In that tweet is also a special club access code. This sounds like harder than James Bond, Rog. That will allow you to skip the admission line. So be sure to RSVP, enter the Men in Blazers code, and we will see you there.
See you there. I'm currently debating whether to set my alarm for 4 a.m. or just stay out all night in that club, David.
Oh, that sounds so unlike you. But maybe Benny Bennett is different. Roger would have never done that. Benny Bennett is out in the club. I love it.
Different person, Benny Bennett. Oh,
okay. Okay, Benny, can you give us a toast? Get us started.
Benny will. Benny refers to himself in the third person. Roger never did, but Benny does. Benny's like Ricky Henderson and the Queen and Adolf Hitler. He refers to himself in the third person.
I like Benny. I think I get along with him.
Do you want Benny Bennett to give you a toast?
Yeah. Could you ask Benny Bennett to give us a toast?
Yeah, I will, because Benny Bennett has been quite well served tonight. So the question part is going to be very fun. But I do want to raise my first third bud of the day to Everton. The player, not the team. He was substituted onto the field tonight for Benfica. Everton came on against Bayern Munich and he promptly scored an own goal within minutes. So technically speaking, Everton scored...
They're in the Champions League.
Yeah, we scored in the Champions League tonight. That, you've got to raise a glass to that. It's just magic. Courage.
How is Everton not playing for Everton? Surely he's just expecting the call to come one day.
Well, you'd think so. I mean, Benny Bennett would like to see that happen. Have Everton, Everton, along with Benny Bennett. Everybody should have alliterating names, David. Let's dive into it, though. Let us dive into, okay. I mean, your questions, just bang them right in there, in the bottom. We're going to pull you up to the stage momentarily. But first, Dave, do you want to give us just a state of play in the world of football?
Yeah. Yeah, to the football, starting with news today out of Tyneside that one game after Saudi-based ownership group PIF. I don't know what their relationship is to Saudi
very
Arabia.
Tangential. Roger, very, very tangential.
They're basically not even Saudi.
Yeah,
they're
not so, even. We don't even think of ourselves as... We think of ourselves as global in our ambition and reach.
Anyway, since PIF, who may have some tenuous connection to Saudi Arabia, took over at Newcastle United, manager Steve Bruce is out by mutual consent. The same kind of mutual consent with which Rog leaves the bar after one too many buds. But after 2 years, after 2 years and one sovereign ownership takeover, Stevie B, he's gone.
God, that is... Do you know how un-Saudi-based PIF is? They don't even like Saudi Arabia, do they? PIF doesn't even like the dictatorship. They're anti all of that stuff. PIF want it to be known. What a day, Davo. Steve Bruce, I'm raising my bud in his general direction, and now his watch is done. He was dispatched this morning. You know, I feel sorry for him, but it should be said, dispatched with a payoff reported at $9.6 million, which I imagine Stevie Bruce, knowing him, probably took in cash and threw it into a wheelbarrow and just walked out of Newcastle and loaded it into the back of his car. It will buy a lifetime of pies. So, you know, we can talk about how we feel about him. That's a lot of bloody money. We should, you know, his accomplishments. I don't know if you know, Dave, 1,000 games as a manager.
It's amazing.
Amazing. Kept Newcastle in the Premier League for the last 2 seasons, which is probably even more amazing. No small feat. But as the face of Mike Ashley's team, deeply, deeply unpopular. The moment, really, he took over from the greatest coach of all time, Rafa Benitez. Yeah, I must say, I found his goodbye message, and I want to read it because it was heartbreaking. He said in an interview with the Daily Telegraph, I think it might be my last job. It's been very, very tough to never really be wanted, to feel that people wanted me to fail and saying I would fail, that I was useless, a fat waste of space, a tactically inept cabbage head. Dave, disgust. That is, I mean, you laugh because it sounds like Eeyore and Michael Scott had a baby when you read that quote. But my God, that's bloody heartbreaking. A grown man, he managed in 1,000 games in football, an incredible player, we should say. For those who never saw him play, Steve Bruce was just a definitive defender, kind of remade the mold, the beginning of defending 2.0, and just an incredibly iconic defender. It's also heartbreaking, isn't it?
It is heartbreaking. I just am imagining the smile on the journalist's face. I don't know who had the byline in the Telegraph as the point he's giving that interview and he realizes he's getting gooled right there.
But let me fact check that with you. Did you say tactically in that cabbage head?
But it was saying, it's sad. I mean, by all accounts, there's a brilliant article in The Athletic today, Rog. Sort of cataloguing his career at Newcastle and sort of where it all started going wrong and how it ended up just going wrong on everything that led to this. And it appears that as though he was perhaps a little tactically inept. And he made some, ultimately in hindsight, foolish choices, backing the owner, Mike Ashley, who was deeply unpopular, made some confusing football decisions and personnel decisions around the club. But he was never going to succeed up there. And for the same reasons that Rafa left, it was just a job that was going to go nowhere. And at least he's walking out with some money.
He's very Saudi in his outlook on life. He's not PIF. He's not, I want to be clear, he's just not a PIF kind of guy. We should have slapped up on social today, and I'm kicking myself. J-Dubs, it's not as if we didn't have anything else to do today, let's be honest. But his great memory, if we were doing a and now his watch is done, it would be just on repeat Bacon, did you see?
Which is bacon.
One of the great.
Did you see a bacon?
Bacon. But, you know, as a player, he and Gary Pallister were really like the friends there to Vidic and Rio Ferdinand's feast. But they really were England's Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley. Before there was an Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley, really, you may have tried to take the rim on them, but it was always going to be at your own risk. And I want to finish this part of the conversation by saying, you know, whatever you felt about him, no human deserves what Steve Bruce has gone through, not just in the past month, but really throughout the death rattle of the Mike Ashley era. And we just genuinely a human devastation. This is a man who's won four promotions from the Championship. Now, despite all the issues, and if you go up to Newcastle, that was one of the saddest training grounds I've ever spent time in. The other saddest one was Sunderland, but for the grace of God, go Newcastle. And, you know, last year he was able to finish above, you know, Hasenhüttl, Hodgson, Nuno, Graham Bloody Potter. And I just think like the personal attacks on this human being should not be the last word. And I was really moved by Alain Saint-Maximin's tweet today, which will be the last word on this before we pivot into Manchester United and then take your questions. Keep loading them up in the old question area. Alain Saint-Maximin tweeted today, and this is beautiful. He wrote, "You are, without a doubt, one of the most gentle people that I have ever met in the world of football. You have been a man of your word, a caring man and a fair man who never hesitated to protect us. I will never forget how you treated me. For that, I will be forever grateful." Let those words be the last words on Steve Bruce. So I imagine right now is wearing a gold Lamé Speedo and diving into the world's largest pie.
Yeah, in Portugal. Okay, Rog, now to the Champions League, where most of the talk today, of course, about Man United's 3-goal second-half comeback to defeat Atalanta, Goody Mom's favourite Serie A team. The winner came via who else? Cristiano Ronaldo, who headed home in the 81st minute to win it for Ole Gunnar.
Man, United fans who are in this green room, please, please, please fire away with your questions, your comments. I really want to talk to you tonight. I want to hug you. I want to love you all night long. I want to know how you're feeling because...
Okay, I don't know where you're going.
I don't know where United are going, is the honest truth. It was, you know, the weird part of tonight, a night of an incredible comeback, let's be candid, with a couple of phenomenal goals, with the Old Trafford faithful lifting their team, it should be said. What a role they bloody played tonight. You know, Old Trafford was absolutely buzzing. You know, there's a lot of talk on, you know, there's a lot of knee-jerk reaction of this is one of the great European nights at Old Trafford, tweeted someone who clearly has no sense of history and no sense of just the true remarkable European nights at that stadium has seen. But what a narrative flip. But it wasn't the point I want to make, and we'll talk about this in the comments. Was there a narrative flip, or was this just something we've seen over and over and over again? Yeah, I tweeted in the first half, Steve Bruce to Manchester United, and a number of United fans were like, oh, please, please, I'd love that in a heartbeat. You know, we talked on the podcast, Dave, about that concept of Taha Avram Grant in Israel pulling, not knowing how he did it, but when he needed it, pulling miracles, magic out of his arse. And I felt watching the second half where United really were, I mean, it was exquisite and it hit all the notes. And the fact that Harry Maguire scored, you know, a guy that has been derided since the Leicester game. And was all over the place for a couple of the Atalanta goals. And then, of course, you know who were the bloody winner in the 81st minute. There was so much that was woeful tonight, David, the disorganisation at the back, all over the place, the terrible finishing. United fans, you have lived every single emotion known to man or to Manchester United. What do you make of it? Where are we at the end of this, other than the sugar high of, holy crap, that hit a lot of nostalgic notes.
Look, Manchester United should beat Atalanta at home. They should top a group featuring Atalanta, Villarreal, and Young Boys. That's actually the name of a team. It's not just young male children. It is a... they should be there. You know, Jonathan Wilson, the esteemed Guardian journalist, has said consistently, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo will score 20 to 25 goals this season, and yet it's a disaster for Man United that he's come in, because it's not going to help them play better football. Yeah. And this is these are the nights that United are going to have all season. But until they start playing some form of organized football, I don't think it's going to get a lot better. So I think, yes, it's great. I'm glad for them that they got a win. A 2-0 loss would have been, I can't imagine if they'd lost that game or even drawn that game against Atlanta. The ramping up, the even more ramping up the pressure on OGS. But all the problems are still there.
I mean, we should raise a hat to Ronaldo, 137 goals in 179 games. Just what an incredible header. Off, I should say, an exquisite Luke Shaw cross. I mean, it really was a work of art. And I'm not just saying that because Men in Blazers has a forthcoming Luke Shaw interview on our television show, and I'm praying that he reverts to the form of the late half of last season, so that he's really in peak apogee when we run it. But, you know, Manchester United were bottom of Group F at one point this evening, and they emerge now top with 6 points. I think the game in Bergamo is going to be unbelievable in the next match day. Just, oh my God. I mean, you read about how Atalanta, the team in their hotel, was woken up 6 times overnight by United fans pulling the fire escape, pulling the fire alarm. I mean, those are CONCACAF rules. This game will be Champions League football played by CONCACAF rules times 100. And I think I felt like this gave United fans, and I want to save our comments really for the question and answer part of this podcast, so that we can really, I don't want to project what United fans are feeling. You know, part of me is like, oh my God, Ole is going to be manager of this team for the next decade, and the whole decade will be on the brink of being fired. He'll just constantly edge. He's going to constantly edge the team. But you know, see, you have Liverpool coming. You are right. If this game had stayed 2-0 or 2-1, you know, God, now Old Trafford has to rise again for Sunday, because this team needs these fans, needs that adrenaline, needs that passion. That's Ole ball, football of passion, not football of brain. Football of emotion, not football of intelligence, not of tactic. It's a football of the individual, the flair, the moment. That's what we saw tonight. Maybe this was Ole ball in its purest form. You know, J-Dubs texted me after the game and said, Ole is a magician. Yes, he's a magician in the same way as Job from Arrested Development was a magician. But I just feel like, God, this was a great win, but it was a win that was like a toupee on the bald man. The faults are so evident, so self-evident. They're so glaring still, even in the moment of victory. There was another game tonight. We will talk more about it, no doubt. Chelsea Football Club had a penalty clinic, really, Dave. But you lost Big Rom and Timo Werner to injury. So bad news and good news there.
could be both. Could be both for either player. Look, Chelsea have so much depth. They came back. We don't know how bad the injuries are yet. But yeah, a good win, a 4-0 win in Europe is always good. We should say that yesterday's games, I'm sure there are lots of Liverpool fans and maybe one or two City fans listening to. City with an impressive win at Bruges, and a good win for Liverpool against Atletico. So many storylines in that game.
It was an incredible game of football, a true spectacle, and just, my Lord, Mo Salah, what a contract negotiation can do to an elite footballer. It's like in my evil heart, in Benny Bennett's evil heart, I'm hoping that this is like watching Aubameyang just score for contract, and then it's just going to fall off a cliff. But I don't think it's going to be that way. Should we move to the questions, David? Because we both love it. In the face.
Yeah, absolutely, Rog. We're going to call you up on stage, invite you to speak. When you move to the stage, please just remember, stay muted until we call on you. And a reminder to everyone listening, the only way you can ask a question is to join us here live on the Green Room. Rog, who is up first?
Oh, that is a very good question. Apologising, Benny Bennett, you may hear Marty Scorsese, who is yelping in the background, and I want to apologise. But, you know, my life is a living hell with Marty Scorsese when he's not with me. He just whelps incredibly. And why should your life for the next hour not be also similarly miserable? Let's bring up to the stage, oh, the great Chris Nagel. Tell us where you're from and what's your question, friendly?
Hello, Dave-O and Big Ben. I'm
Benny! Benny!
Big Ben. Oh, let's not encourage it. Big Ben. Big Ben is a whole other alter ego of Roger.
That's the name I'm going to change myself to legally. Like, yay, but I've got to get there yet. I've got to earn that, Chris Nagel. Where are you, mate? What's your question?
I'm calling from South Jordan, Utah.
Wow.
Holy crap. Is there a North Jordan or is it just...
Just a west. It. There's a west and a south. That's all we got to before we stopped giving directional names to Jordan.
I'm genuinely perplexed. Did they just get bored, tired, exhausted? Or what's the history? Do we know who the Jordan is, Chris? I've got so many questions.
It's a mystery, and I'm a transplant, so I just go with what the locals say and call it South Jordan.
Where are you from in real life?
From California, a much different story.
I like to believe that it's named after Hendo in Utah. They were really, really taken by the work of Hendo, and they're like,
are you sure it wasn't Pickford?
Believe me, there's no one that's less Utah than Jordan Pickford.
The funniest thing is it would be if it was Jordan Ibe. Yeah.
What's your question, Chris?
Or AU.
Just wondering, like you've talked about, is Manchester United holding itself back by these results? I mean, it seems like every time there's momentum for Ole to be on the move, they keep him in the game. And what will it take to pull the trigger? Is it a group stage exit? Is it out of the top four? What do you think it'll take to get rid of him?
You know, there is this element that, you know, football fans often have of opposing teams that they don't really like, is they sort of want their teams, their rival teams, to sort of substandard managers to hang on by eking out results here and there, because it's better for you. I know that a lot of people felt that way, you know, towards the end of Arsene Wenger's reign at Arsenal Football Club. I'm sure, you know, a lot of Mourinho haters have had that feeling about him at all the clubs he's managed over the years. You know, I think it's just odd. I mean, we spoke about a little bit in the opening. It is a, you know, I don't know what has to happen at Manchester United for Ole to lose his job. He apparently has a lot of credit. It seems like you've got a lot of credit. It's the cash rolling out of your pocket there. But it's a, he has a lot of credit at Man United somehow. And I don't know what it's going to take for them to move on as a club.
Can I ask you one quick question, Chris? Can you just put yourself on mute while you while you're up here? We will bring you back, but you were like in a wind tunnel and you are in a place that was clearly named after Jordan Morris. Let's be candid. You know, I'm quite fascinated by your question about what United have to do so you sever yourselves from Ole. Like tonight, we lived all those emotions. Like, it's a very interesting point where a team is disappointing so much and a team with so much potential and they're just not harnessing their results to the extent that never mind that you want, but you should expect at this point with that kind of squad. Like, there is a mini parallel that I think US fans went through in the last cycle. And it's like, there's a faction always want them to, Arsenal fans will know, they've been through it many, many, you always want your team to lose. Which you never wish, but you just want rid of this manager so badly, you've just got to the end of the road. And I felt like, I mean, with Ole, it's really gotten there several times. We've gone through this cycle. And tonight was a crescendo. There were some boos at halftime. I mean, Ole won at the end and was able to say, damn you, Arsenal, United fans. who booed us at halftime. You have to have belief. So now the United faction who don't like him will have to silence themselves and wait for a truly devastating time. But I think that, you know, you look at this cycle and yes, there was a wonderful win tonight, a wonderful comeback win. There were great goals, the team. There was a wonderful moment post-game where a journalist asked Ole, "Did you think the team played for you tonight? Do you think this was like a vote of confidence from the players, essentially?" And God love Ole, he's very good at press conferences. He said, that's a disgrace of a question. The players, they play for Manchester United. They play for the idea of United. I mean, wankery that he came out with, but it was effective wankery. And the reality is, you have to be honest, Valencia was a comeback win that was meant to herald a new era. We were promised that was a turning point. There was no turning point. It just led to the sludge we've lived through in the Premier League. And, you know, Liverpool coming, that front three must be looking at videos of the United defending tonight and just be like, oh my God, this is hilarious. We made Mane, you may be able to score your 200th goal in this game. And that's ultimately it. That's the Harry. If I were a United fan, and I know football fans now have the memory of a fish, goldfish, where it's like one game is a crisis when you lose, and one game when you win is comeback, title chase back on. But I'd be looking at Valencia, that comeback win there, and being like, you know, what really is changing here? Or are we in a very, it's Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, that death rattle. It was the same. David, we talked about that being like an M.C. Escher staircase where you're just constantly going around the same narrative. That's what it feels like with United right now, right?
Yeah, and there's nothing that,
there's no evidence that you see. Even a 3-2 victory with a, in the, if you'd said before the season, hey, on this night, on, you know, October the 20th, Man United will come from 2-0 behind. They'll win 3-2 at Old Trafford against Atalanta, a strong Atalanta side. And Cristiano Ronaldo will score the winner in the 81st minute. You'd be saying, yes, I'll have that. And yet where we are in the season with everything we watched tonight, there just isn't that same thrill.
That is, that. Can you just say a couple more words? Because I'm Googling South Jordan, Utah. I'm
desperate, desperate to come out with a fact.
Yeah, if anybody listening knows, you know what I'm going to throw out to you? Anyone listening to the podcast knows why. I'm always fascinated. I'm always open. And God, if it is Jordan Pickford, David, I'm going to give you a tenner. Insight credits. That is...
I could just text Ken Jennings. He'll probably tell me.
That's the honest truth. Adam, come on up, man. Tell us where you're from and what's your question.
Hello, Men in Blazers. This is Adam Reeves. I'm from Lexington, Kentucky.
Lucky man.
God. Can I tell you, Adam, I went to a wedding in Lexington, Kentucky. It's one of the greatest nights of my life. I've really...
Was it you or Benny who went to that wedding? Was it Rog or Benny? Oh, you were Rog.
Definitely Rog. Okay. It was a pre-Benny transformation. Okay. It was one of the great... I love your city. I love everything about it. It was the last wedding I've been to where there was cigarettes on every table in a little silver cigarette server. They played it was like ZZ Top all night after the wedding. And it was... It was one of the greats. So I feel you, Adam. It's a joy to be with you. What's your question?
Well, thank you, gents. And I had forgotten inviting you to my wedding, but I'm glad that you had a good time.
Yeah, good.
So my question, I am a new devotee of soccer. I've, of course, started like many great American soccer fans rooting for our men's and women's national teams. But it wasn't until this season that I truly fell in love with professional club soccer, namely the EPL. And while I fell in love with club soccer, I didn't necessarily immediately fall in love with a club until I started watching Brentford. The Brentford Bees' first game against Arsenal with the fans singing Hey Jude, celebrating with their fans afterwards was captivating. That being said, I have two questions. Where do they finish at the end of the season? Please tell me it's not the relegation zone because I've already purchased a jersey. And second, how long until Tomas Frank is prowling the sidelines at what is it you call it, new castle for his new piff.
That's a great question.
Yeah. Nouveau Chateau.
I forgot that one. That's such a great question. How long has he got, David? How long has he got is what he's asking.
Well, look, can I just say that the one thing that occurred to me as Adam was saying that is that it is very likely that, you know, we always said that the default Americans EPL club of choice was Tottenham. Because when they do the math, they figure that they want a team in London that they can get to easily. A team that don't feel like they're the biggest, that they're jumping on a bandwagon, a team that play in a good stadium, a team that has some American connection, you know, certainly when Dempsey used to play for them. And, you know, Americans by default will choose Tottenham Football Club. If blue or red, they play in like, you know, such a dark blue, it's really black and white. It's like easy to sort of fall in love with that team. Brentford may just become the American default club of choice if they can put in 2 or 3 years in the Premier League and stay up. Brentford, even more convenient to Heathrow Airport, probably, I think, the most convenient to Heathrow Airport, maybe Reading's a little bit closer. I'm not sure. Brentford is very, far out there in West London towards Heathrow. It's so convenient from the airport. You could probably get in and get out on the same day to go and see a Brentford game. So from the East Coast, certainly. So I love Brentford as a choice. I think Brentford are not going to get relegated this year. Of course, that's easy to say after 8 games when they've been playing magnificent football. But there's just something about this club, something about the manager, something about the way that those players play, something about how hard they make it for the opposition to play football, something about the crowd, just something about it that makes me think that Brentford are there to stay. I do think that you're onto something. I think that Thomas Frank is going to get poached or offered. They're, you know, every time one of these, you know, manager vacancies come up and you think, okay, well, who's really available to go in and coach that club? German managers, very much in vogue. He really is just magnificent. And I think he could be gone. Whether or not he'd be crazy enough to go to Newcastle, he should probably read the article in The Athletic about Steve Bruce before he does.
Thomas Frank is... What is he? Where's he from? He's from... I've just Googled him. He's a American political analyst, historian, and journalist who co-founded the Baffling Eye. He's a Denmark...
He's not German. No. He's Danish.
I thought you were saying that to say that will protect him. No one will want him because he's Danish when everyone...
Oh, you're right. He's Danish. Did he not coach in Germany? Does he not have a German connection? Maybe not.
I think he probably dislikes Germans, which makes him even more attractive in my book. But the reality is, you know, I love Brentford too. I love your question. Can I tell you that? I adore your question because you not only asked your question, you also answered it quite brilliantly. Like, your big worry should be, like, I think the team itself playing 4-4-2 old school, like a band that's lead, rhythm, bass, drums, hard to explain why, but it just always works. Like, it's going to keep working. But then you cut off the head of the snake, Thomas Frank. And I talked about this in the podcast this week. You look, I look at Brentford, and I don't know if you do. Tell me in the comments. I look at Brentford, I'm like, oh my God, that is what a great managed team looks like if I'm a US fan. Like, that's a difference a coach. But you look at Ole, that's a difference a coach makes in a negative way. Obviously, I talk about this a lot when I interview a manager that Trapattoni once said a good manager can make a team 10% better, a bad manager can make them 30% worse. And I once asked Mourinho if he believed that, and he just looked at me, paused dramatically for a beat, and said, I think the percentages are a little off for a good manager. Ha, ha, ha. And, you know, you look at Thomas Frank and you actually realize Mourinho was right. What he's done, taking that idea, that culture, that just collective fury is truly wonderful. And if I were a Brentford, I'd feel great. I'd be soaring. I'd be making memories that I've always dreamt of. But I'd also be looking at a little team called Sheffield United. And I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but Leeds United are currently in a cycle that's known as the Sheffield United. And then I'd look, who's next in that they come up, they soar, they create incredible memories, and then they plummet in season two. What could make Brentford, which is a sage team, a strategic team, a deeply, deeply thoughtful team, in a way Sheffield United were not, if I'm being honest, having spent time up there,
The bad news for Brentford fans is I'm about to drop my promoted for Brentford, which is always a anvil around the neck of Wile E. Coyote. But also, if you lose Thomas Frank, and how do you keep Thomas Frank is really the question. I mean, in modern football, you can't. What do you do after that? I'm going to go dot, dot, dot and not spell it out. I'll just say I'd like to believe. I mean, believing in Brentford is like believing in the powers of levitation. Let's tonight, just for tonight, let's all believe in the power of levitation. Let's believe in the power of Ivan Toomey, sudden Jamie Vardy, who scores at every level. The narrative's there. People who dare to dream and don't back down when on the big stage. That's who Brentford is for right now, and I admire and love it. One quick update before we move on to the next question, Davo. Jordan, Utah is named after the Jordan River in Utah. So we need to know who the Jordan River was bloody named after. Jordan River was named the Western Jordan in 1847 by Heber C. Kimball. Soon after his arrival in Utah, he noted its resemblance to the Middle Eastern river of the same name. So I guess that means that Jordan is named after Jordan Klepper, Jordan Kepper. I think that's probably as a sensible answer as any. Godspeed, America. Thank you for throwing that one in. And we'll move to Amy Priborski. Amy, where are you? What's your question?
Hey, Raj. It's good to talk to you.
Benny.
Hey.
You're talking to Benny.
Oh.
Benny Bennett is my name now.
Oh, really? Yeah. All right, Benny.
Yeah.
Good to talk to
Amy.
You.
Amy. Benny here. It's Benny. Where are you, AP?
I'm in the land of Sauerbrunn and Klingenberg. I'm out in Portland.
Oh, my Lord. Look after those two American originals. Those two are just incredible human beings, as are you. What is your question?
All right. As a longtime Manchester United fan, I was happy to get a defender in Rafael de Varane, and I'm heartbroken that he has been injured. And I want to know if him being there was papering over some of the cracks that now I see Maguire just kind of ball watching and standing around. It's hard to watch.
Whoa, Amy, that is a great... I love hypotheticals in history. I do. I always wonder, like, if the plot against Hitler had worked when his generals planted that bomb, you know, would the war have ended earlier? Who knows is the honest answer, Amy, but let me not be like that. Let me throw it to Davo. Davo, hypotheticalize away.
I'll tell you who I've loved this season. Well, love may be an overstatement, but he certainly hit some good passes, is Lindelof out of that centre-back position. Maguire has had a challenging season. Like many of the players that start at the Euros, we're seeing this sort of like Euro fatigue setting in. And I wonder if Maguire needs a little rest, needs a little sit down, but he's not going to get it right now with Varane also on the injured list. I think it would be nice to see Lindelof and Varane maybe combining, see what that could bring. See some more competition for places at the centre-back position. I think that would be good. Look, one of the problems at Man United, and you hear this sort of in the rumblings to the press of a lot of their squad, is they don't really know where they fit in. They don't really know what the rotation is. They don't really know when they're going to get a game. And you feel like Ollie is like just trying all sorts of different combinations, trying to find his magic, and hasn't quite found it yet.
Yeah, I think that Maguire loves to go through this cycle. I loved it today when he scored. And I want to be clear, I really did. So everyone's like, we never doubted you, Harry. You're amazing. I mean, the reality is he's not fit. He probably shouldn't be playing right now. And it's a very English trait. You know, it's just a flesh wound is the joke. He's thrown himself back in when he's clearly not fit. Dude needs another holiday in Mykonos. Needs to be kidnapped by fake police and then have his slump. And then Harry Maguire comes back stronger. It's something about the name Harry, Davo. You need doubt and then self-doubt, and then they catalyze it. I think Harry Maguire is a fantastic human being, a great player. He's off form. I think it's tied to his medical reality. I mean, there's some players who will be deeply injured, but what a play, you know, believe in the collective so much. There's many players, and we can talk about who they are, if that's interesting, who like feel a slight twinge and awareness and are like, sorry, manager, can't go. Daniel Sturridge was one of those. Jurgen Klopp always used to say, if he's like just 95% if he's just 95% fit, then he'll be like, can't go today. You know, I'm not where I need to be. There was a US soccer player. I'm trying to remember who the hell it was. I think it was John O'Brien, who actually in a world, he was going to start in a World Cup game, and told the manager, yeah, I'm just not feeling it. I don't feel like I'm 100%. And took himself out of the team in a World Cup game, which is really a remarkable thing. And if it's not John O'Brien, then I want to apologise. It's from that era, and I will fact check it and revert. But you know, the reality is Harry Maguire, Godspeed. Varane is almost our dream. Varane is our mythical solution. He's our potion that we believe or like to believe will solve this. United win. I mean, as United fans of long-term standing, Amy, you know, United always built success on dominant centre-backs. Obviously, they had all the flair players that we remember. But, you know, starting from Steve Bruce, that, what did he call himself, the Cabbage, and Pallister, up through Ferdinand and Vidic, you know, everything was built on solidity. And, you know, there's few clubs at which fans try and ship players into position, and United and centre back Eric Bailly, Daley Blind. You know, we want these guys to be great, and they have not been. And yes, United are about attack. And yes, United have always been that, but attack needs confidence at the back. You need to rampage forward, knowing that everything is locked down on the back. United currently don't have that, and ultimately, you know, the Varane thing is just, it's wonderful, magical thinking. And imagine, Amy Pavorsky, I'm guessing we've not met, we've not had spent time together. I'm imagining you may love magical realism in your literature. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong in that. I think I'd file Varane at United under magical realism yet, because we've had no proof. If I were a United fan, I'd want a sager director of football, the recruitment. Like, why are we bringing in Jadon Sancho and Ronaldo in a transfer window when we all know, even a moron, Roger Bennett, that's the old me, knew United needed a number six. Like, why is that? And now we're living out that, like, the back four are insecure because they're not shielded, and you can't shield them. We knew we couldn't shield with McTominay and Fred. We knew Matic couldn't do a job. And that's ultimately it. So let's pretend it's Varane. I do think it's the director of football. It's all about the recruitment. And Amy Pavorsky, on this question, I'm going to give you the last say. And tell me, was that terribly crude of me to say, do you like magical realism?
No, it wasn't terribly crude. I do like magical realism. I think you're right. Yeah.
So that's it. Varane is your Gabriel Marquez. Let's believe. I love that you believe. You always need to believe. I'm not knocking it in any way. And I will say, there's no, Varane is a classy footballer, a tactically adept footballer. And I would love him to succeed and thrive rather than fall into that dark context, which is currently the United defence. So I will magically believe with you, Amy Pavorsky. And if that happens, I will raise my hat to you also. So come back to the next green room. Let's keep checking in, and let's move to the great Fiona. Come on up. Tell us where you're from, what your question is.
Hi, guys. I'm in Valhalla, New York. I'm still not a cat. Second time I got on the green room. I'm very excited. I'm a Liverpool fan, but actually tonight my question is about Leeds.
Oh.
Yeah, hear that groan. Leeds was everybody's Brentford last year. I think maybe that's right.
Yes. Yes.
What's happened this year? Is it the curse of Raj because he interviewed Bielsa? Is it just they've got injuries to some of their key players? Or is it that everyone has figured out how Leeds plays and has realized that you can exhaust them if you kind of park the bus or whatever the correct term is? I apologize if I'm getting it wrong. But I'm really curious because I enjoyed watching Leeds last year. And this year I'm kind of like, it's a little bit painful. So
it is excruciating, Fiona. I want to say before Dave has a crack at this, that when I interviewed Bielsa, the hilarious part of it was, like, the question I thought that I really worked on and really crafted that I thought would unlock
everything about his philosophy for the American audience who had not had the joy of really engaging with him before last season. I really worked so hard on the one question, and he answered it just with no. And then the question that I just made up on the spot that I panicked and threw out, I thought was stupid. He then answered for 42 minutes. And so, gotta love him. I did interview him. I'm not sure I cursed him. I think whatever happens, Bielsa brings on himself in wonderful ways and ways of challenge. But David, how do you understand the Leeds doing?
I mean, it's a little bit like the scene in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, you know, with the guy comes out and does all that elaborate knife work, and then Harrison Ford just picks up the gun and shoots them. And Bielsa's, you know, tactics. I applaud the rest of the Premier League if they've really figured out what he's doing, because sometimes I'm not even sure what Bielsa, you know, is really thinking, or if his players truly understand it. They know just they run around like banshees and create havoc and chaos. And definitely something is a little amiss in their system and their play this year. It could be that other teams have figured it out. It could be that they're just exhausted. Maybe a combination of the two. Very tough to keep up what he's doing. I still think Leeds will bounce back. I think they will have a better season. I still believe in them. I think there are worse teams with worse players than them in the league. And Bielsa, you know, if we believe he is the genius that we all held him as last season, I think he'll figure out a way to get more results.
Well, I think that it's just a toxic combo of the Leeds training, which is, you know, I was speaking to someone today about Pochettino at Southampton. He used to do occasionally three a days, and the players complained that it was like being flogged as a horse. I think whatever Bielsa does to them is even worse when you speak to them. I mean, it's grueling. The in-game tactics that need 90 minutes of just Red Bull adrenaline, which you can keep up if you have a proper Premier League squad. But Leeds don't replenish for whatever reason. And that's the thing I don't understand. They did not replenish in this transfer window. And the players a level of exhaustion kicks in. It's like the Alexis Sanchez effect. That was a player who demanded to play every 90 minutes. If Wenger took him off, he'd go mental. You know, everyone would say he just wants to play every game for Chile. He wants to play every game for Arsenal. And then his legs just went. They just went totally. It coincided with him playing the piano for Manchester United in the welcome video. But that's what's happened to Leeds en masse. Their legs have just gone. Exhaustion has kicked in. And I love Leeds. I love the city. I went to university there. I love the club. I love the history. I love the people. The people in Leeds are just hilariously wonderful. And just the Yorkshire mentality, just straight-talking human beings. So I hope they can write it. But it's going to need some January transfer moves to bring in some new legs to re-energise that squad, Fiona. Otherwise, pray for Leeds. Next question. Let's bring up the mighty Jerome. Tell us where you are, Jerome, and what's your question?
Hello, hello. Coming to you from Denver, Colorado.
Oh, an exquisite city, we always say. The town that Lindsay Horan built.
Oh, what? Absolutely. I saw Lindsay at a coffee shop 2 years ago.
Is she?
And
what have you got to tell us? Cappuccino with two espresso shots.
I think she was with her mom. And I got real nervous. I didn't want to annoy her and get a photo. So she walked by me. This was post World Cup, maybe a month or two. And I just said, hey, Lindsay, congrats on everything. But she looked relatively surprised. But then my kids were annoyed that I didn't get a photo. But hey.
I have so many questions. All I can tell you is you did the right thing. And God love Mother Horan. She is the mother of an incredible, genuinely an incredible American footballer. Lindsay Horan is one of my favorites. What's your question?
You know, if we don't have to talk too much about Newcastle United and ownership, I'll just say up front, as a Newcastle fan, I think it's one of the grossest things that has happened in quite a while, but so it is. I wanted to know what y'all think of the, Fonseca, is he a real target for Brucey's replacement? And what do you think he can do, you know, with the club? Is he going to stick around for a while, take on January transfer and summer signings, et cetera, or will it be somewhat of a short window? I also have a new slogan that I'd like to run by everybody for Newcastle.
Please, let's do that.
Yeah, I might need some help and some copyright if I'm going to run some merch, but it's Newcastle United. It's not just the hope that'll kill ya.
Yeah. There's lots of things that can kill you. I mean, Jerome, I think that, you know, we would love to answer your first question intelligently, but this is football, and this is football gone mad, and football gone madder than mad, and nobody knows what's going to happen. This is just the beginning. What is it? Churchill is just this is not the end. It's just the end of the beginning.
No, we didn't say that. He said it's just a fifth, it's not Saudi Arabia.
So there are so many chapters to be told in this story. There are so many pages to go until we're at the end of this first chapter. It could be Fonseca. It could be 1,000 other people. I think it's going to be a bizarre twist and turn of an event. I mean, right now, yeah, I guess a manager. I'm just really interested to see who ultimately wants to go and take on this job.
I mean, it is fascinating. I need to ask you very quickly before I dive into this and tell you now this is not the end. It's not even the beginning of the end, but it is perhaps the end of the beginning, according to Winston Churchill, who clearly had never met the Longstaff brothers. But I need to know. Before I bullshit you an answer, how did you choose Newcastle, mate?
Solid Alan Shearer back in the day, and you know, many years of being away. I was in the forest, away from the Premier League, but then, truly, with the help of you guys, I finally just kind of got back into it. So, but it was, you know, late 90s, my brother was a big fan, and he used to get VHS tapes of highlights from friends who had a satellite, I guess, or something. And that was when I would just watch highlights, like goals of the week. And that's what landed anything Alan Shearer. Well,
that's incredible. Like, you sound like we're doing a thing about Soviet Union and the move towards Glasnost, just videotapes of Paul McCartney. Right. Back in the 1970s were what made you urge for freedom. Well, the reality is, here's the story, and I'm shocked by this, is there's a lot of parallel with Manchester City, because I know that Newcastle were not brought by a nation state, they were brought by a PIF. But let's pretend they were brought by a nation state, just so I can even...
It's just a PIF.
But Manchester City were brought by a nation state, not a PIF. But I will say, this nation state had and still has, you know, even people who loathe them. I wrote about this in my newsletter this week. David Conn, who is the Guardian's journalist, he's deeply progressive. He's an economist. He writes about the business of football. He loathes as any right-thinking person would, the notion of a nation buying a team for sports washing purposes. He happened to be a childhood Manchester City fan, a Mancunian, and he, you know, abhorred the takeover of the team he loved by a nation state, even more than anyone that I've met. But he says, you know, he writes in his book, Richard and God, even I had to admire the strategy and the thought and the detail and the planning that went into Manchester City's takeover by not a PIF, by a nation state. And now fast forward to now, I am shocked by the lack of planfulness, the lack of evidence strategy, the lack of, at any level, you know, surface level, comms level, to, you know, the deepest level, putting football human beings in
who can transform a culture and move it from one of turgid mediocrity towards excellence. And I say that as context, which just to echo David's question about who will take over, we have no idea who would want to. Yes, there's the echo of Saudi Arabia, but my God, this is a team in 19th. This is a rotten team. A team of one player, arguably, who will in two seasons still be on the squad. And no, 11 games till you can bring in new blood. No proof that you're not going to go down with the ship. It's a poison chalice that may give you life forever, but may poison you. And who's going to take that bet? Who is going to, want to take their career and gamble with it? If I was Stevie G, am I that desperate to move into the Premier League? Do I not believe in myself enough that I'm going to take a job with a real platform I can build off, that I'm going to jump into this? So it is a wild one. I think the fact that Frank Lampard was linked to the tune shows just how lack of, unless it's his agents briefing the press. I would love to see Frank Lampard take the job, bring over his former NYCFC teammate Tommy McNamara to write the tune. But I don't think we know. And I do think that's the reality is you have the promise of riches that are never known by any other manager, not named Pep Guardiola, but you have to get through 11 brutal, unforgiving games of expectations that in overdrive. And a just fervent fan base who've been told today not to wear kefirs to games. By the way, I loved the Newcastle's tweet asking their fans to stop wearing. But Newcastle in their tweet said, please do not wear, be sensitive about your dress. Do not wear kefirs unless you wear a kefir regularly. I mean, the language they had to use, this is the moment we are in with this club, this complexity, this level of wonder, this level of chaos, and we will see who is willing to essentially grab the third rail and dive on in during. I wish you happiness. I wish you joy. Your fan base definitely deserves it. I think there's going to be a lot of turbulence. So brace yourself for both. Let us bring on a couple of quick ones. Eddie N, come be with us, you beautiful human being. Tell us where you're from and what your question is.
Fellas, it's good to see you again. My name is Eddie. I'm from Phoenix, by way of Philadelphia. I'm like 20 games into my professional soccer support home here, and I am about to come on to my first derby, the West Lancashire Derby, first one in 11 years between Blackpool and Preston North End. And I wanted to ask you guys, what's your earliest memory of your respective derbies for Raj? I know it's the Merseyside derby, and Davo, I know you're a Chelsea guy, but I don't know what directional London derby it is. There's too many of them. So just wanted to see which one.
Well, there are many. Yeah, good. Very good point. There are many, but it's really Arsenal I want to win.
So what's your guys' earliest memories, and what should I do? I got my Lancashire flag. I got my orange and checkered, tangerine checkered flag. I'm ready to go, but I just wanted to know what your guys' earliest derby memories are.
Eddie N, you're a madman. You're 20 games into your football fandom, and you've chosen either Blackpool or Derby.
Well, I've chosen Blackpool and I've chosen Liverpool, but the Derby. What's your guys' earliest Derby memory?
God, you're a madman, Eddie N. Dave, go on, go for it, beautiful.
Well, I mean, I think the first Derby I saw live was not Chelsea Arsenal. I saw, because I only went to a certain number of Division 1, Division 2 games in the 1970s. First derby I saw was Chelsea-West Ham at West Ham. That was a deeply terrifying human experience. It's like I'm still traumatized to this day by what I saw and what I heard, frankly, in that game. It was played on mud. There was not a blade of grass at the old Upton Park when I watched that game. The standard of football, if you could call it that, was just atrocious. And just the smell of everything and everyone was even worse. That was my first. It was not a game to make you fall in love with football, that's for sure.
Did you drink some Bovril?
Bovril. No, I may as well, though. I was probably about 8 years old, and I may as well have drunk like 15 pints of beer, considering that through the process of osmosis, how much I absorbed and smoked like 3 packets of Woodbines. It was just that kind of like rotten 1970s English experience.
I love the idea of Bruvel. They should have called it Bruvel. Eddie, Ed, you are such a knowledgeable human being. I will tell you this, and I want to apologize to all the other question askers. I have got to, I've just realized I meant to address the University of Maryland Media School and warn them all against entering the media, which is really my goal in the next hour. So I've got to jump on with those guys and could tell this. But Eddie M, my first memory of a derby, 1978, 7-year-old Rog, Liverpool playing Everton. I happened to be in London. My auntie was getting married. I was so furious that I couldn't be at the game. And in those days, there was no internet. And so you watch the football also wasn't on live in England, which is too complicated to explain. But there was just genuinely no way of following along the game as the wedding was happening. And I remember what my dad is still to this day. The games are put on in England is highlights on a show called Match of the Day, which is like 10 o'clock on Saturday. And many English people to this day avoid the results completely obsessively so they can watch these games that happen hours earlier on Match of the Day as if they were live. And my dad spent the whole wedding just be like, don't tell me the scores. Don't tell me the scores. Walking up to strangers, his first impression, this Liverpool guy up in London, was, don't tell me the scores. We walked out of the wedding. We were in Swiss Cottage, there you go. And, oh no, we were in the West End. And there was a sign for some Swiss hotel that just be, it was like the greatest technology in England. It was a flashing, it could do a news feed, like in old school flashing, very crude, font. And we walked out the wedding, and to my horror, it just flashed up. Everton 1, Liverpool 0, final score. And my dad went berserk. He like rent his tuxedo shirt, just howling as if this thing had defied him. But it was it, the Andy King goal. It's an amazing memory, and a memory that's indelible in anyone who watched it, because they interviewed Liverpool manager, Liverpool captain, the centre-back, Phil Thompson, after the game. And they said, how did you feel, Phil? And he just leant into the microphone and he goes, I'm sick, sick as a parrot, which is just an amazing quote there. Sick as a parrot, to come up with that was just all the sweeter. So that is the derby. I think we've probably won about 2 derbies since then as well, by the way. But that's the one that's entered my mind. I wish you joy and success, Eddie N, in your new fandom. I love it, dude. I love your passion.
Thank you, guys.
I love your joy. I love your joy for details. I apologize to everyone whose questions we've not, particularly old goat. I want to apologize to you because you're the greatest human being in every way. But the future of American journalism at the University of Maryland are pinging me, and I don't want to let them down, Dave. So just take us out, beautiful human being, and we'll be back next Wednesday.
Absolutely. That is it for this Spotify Green Room. Come see us in Los Angeles this weekend. Check our Twitter.
Your manner.
Enter that code.
Your manner.
Yeah, my manner. I'm flying out in the morning, Rog. I'll be in my manner. Can't wait to be with you. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig.
Was that a rebuttal?
I like snacks.
Bulls win.
Take that, Gloria.
Bulls lose.
Swede.
Abrigado, rock on, Benny Bennett.
Benny Bennett says, Kung Fu fight in America. Benny Bennett, out.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.